All right, so today we're going to dive into something pretty interesting out of Massachusetts, a case called Wallace W. versus Commonwealth. It's a 2019 decision, and it really gets at this this whole question of, you know, second chances in the juvenile justice system. You know, how do we balance rehabilitation with still holding young people accountable for their actions?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, Massachusetts has really been working on reforming its juvenile justice laws for a while now.
Yeah.
And in this case, Wallace W. is a great example of that. This whole idea that, you know, young people's brains are still developing, they think differently than adults. And so the focus, especially for less serious offenses, should be more on rehabilitation, right? Like helping them learn from their mistakes rather than just punishing them.
Right. And you know, there's this specific part of the Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 19, Section 52, yeah, that's really at the heart of this case.
Mm.
And basically what it says is that if a juvenile commits like a really minor misdemeanor, something where the maximum penalty is like 6 months in jail, or just a fine, you know, something really small, and it's their first offense, then the case can actually be dismissed.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the surface, it seems pretty straightforward, right?
Right.
But as we'll see, the devil's in the details. Like,
yeah,
what does first offense actually mean?
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to unpack today. Like, how did the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC, how did they redefine that term in this Wallace W. case?
Yeah.
And what does that mean, like, practically speaking, for how these cases are handled?
Yeah, and this case is a huge deal for law students especially. I mean, it's like a textbook example of how courts go about interpreting statutes, you know, the written law, especially when the language is a little bit ambiguous.
Right.
And we see this principle called the rule of lenity come into play, which is super important. And it also gives you a good look at the procedural side of juvenile law, like how these cases actually move through the system.
Right, exactly. So let's get into the specifics of the case itself. So we've got Wallace W., a juvenile, and he gets charged with unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle.
Right.
Which, like we said, is a misdemeanor. The worst thing that could happen is he gets a fine. So it seems like it could fall under this first offense rule, potentially.
Yeah, it does. At first glance, anyway.
Right.
But here's the thing. Wallace had some, you know, prior run-ins with the law.
Okay.
And the specifics of this are really important. Like, in the past, he'd faced some drug charges.
Mm-hmm.
And a charge of operating a vehicle without authority.
Right.
But all of these charges were ultimately dismissed, so they didn't stick.
Right.
And then on top of that, he also had this open felony case for breaking and entering at the time he got charged with the unlicensed driving.
Oh.
But, and this is a really crucial part, Wallace had never actually been adjudicated delinquent for anything before, meaning there was never a formal finding in juvenile court that he was guilty of any offense. It was all just charges that got dismissed. Or a case that was still pending.
Got it. So prior contact, but no actual formal finding of guilt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that distinction is going to be super important as we go through this.
Right. So then Wallace gets charged with this unlicensed driving thing. What happens? His lawyer's obviously like, hey, this should be dismissed under Section 52, right?
Exactly. They filed a motion to dismiss the case, arguing that, yeah, under Section 52, this was his first offense because, legally speaking, he didn't have any prior adjudications. He had never been found delinquent before.
Makes sense.
Hmm.
So what did the trial court think about that?
Well, the trial court judge didn't buy it.
Okay.
They basically said, no, those prior charges, even though they were dismissed, they still count. Like, the fact that charges were even brought in the first place meant that there was probably something going on.
Hmm.
So they denied the motion to dismiss.
Interesting. And that's why this case ended up in front of the SJC, right?
Exactly. The SJC decided to step in and take a look at this, and they granted something called interlocutory review.
Which is, like, not the usual process, right?
Right. It's not typical. Usually appeals happen after a trial is over and there's a final judgment.
Right.
But in this case, the SJC decided to step in early because they realized this was a really important issue. Like, it wasn't just about Wallace. It was about how this first offense provision was going to be interpreted and applied across the entire state.
Right. It had implications for the whole juvenile justice system in Massachusetts.
Yeah, exactly. They saw this as a systemic issue. So when the SJC takes a case like this, you know it's a big deal.
Right. Huge. Okay, so what was the big legal question at the heart of all this?
Well, it all boils down to this. What did the legislature really mean when they wrote that first offense language in Section 52?
Mm-hmm.
Did they mean no prior adjudications, no formal findings of delinquency, like Wallace's lawyers were arguing?
Right.
Or did they mean any prior involvement with the justice system at all?
Right. Even just charges that didn't go anywhere.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's break down those arguments a little bit.
Yeah.
What exactly was Wallace's legal team's position?
So Wallace's lawyers were saying, look, the statute says first offense. It doesn't say anything about charges or probable cause or anything like that. It says first offense. And an offense in the legal context usually means a formal finding of guilt, an adjudication.
Right, an actual conviction.
Yeah. So they were basically saying, you know, a charge is just an accusation. It doesn't mean someone actually did anything wrong.
Right.
And in Wallace's case, those charges were dismissed, so there was never any determination that he actually committed those offenses.
Makes sense.
And to bolster their argument, they brought up this really important legal principle called the rule of lenity.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. What is the rule of lenity? Like, in plain English, what does that mean?
So the rule of lenity is basically this. If a criminal law, a statute, is written in a way that's unclear or ambiguous, like if it could be reasonably interpreted in more than one way, then the court should interpret it in the way that's most favorable to the defendant.
Okay.
The idea is that people should have fair notice of what is and isn't a crime.
Right.
So if the law itself is unclear, then the benefit of the doubt should go to the person who's accused of breaking it.
I see. So it's kind of like if the state can't write a clear law, then they shouldn't get to punish people for maybe breaking a law that wasn't clear to begin with.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So in Wallace's case, his lawyers are basically saying, look, the statute isn't super clear about what first offense means, so we should interpret it in the way that benefits Wallace, which is to say that it means no prior adjudications of delinquency.
Got it. So that was their side. What about the Commonwealth's arguments? What were they saying?
So the Commonwealth had a different perspective. They were more focused on the potential for abuse of this first offense rule. Their argument was basically, look, someone could theoretically get into trouble over and over again, get charged with these minor offenses, but then, for whatever reason, those charges get dropped or dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we say that first offense only means no prior adjudications, then that person could keep getting away with this behavior.
Right.
They could just keep claiming first offense every time, even if they have a history of doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I see their point.
So the Commonwealth was basically concerned that the purpose of this law, which is to give young people a second chance for truly isolated incidents, could be undermined if someone could just keep racking up charges without ever having a formal finding of guilt.
Right. So both sides had some valid points. This wasn't an easy case for the SJC to decide.
Right.
So what did they end up doing? How do they reconcile those competing interpretations?
Well, the SJC ultimately sided with Wallace.
Okay.
They agreed that the term offense in the statute was ambiguous. It could mean just the alleged conduct, or it could mean a formal finding of guilt. And because of that ambiguity, they said, we're going to apply the rule of lenity and interpret it in the way that's most favorable to the juvenile.
Okay.
So they held that for the purposes of Section 52, first offense means that the juvenile has no prior adjudications of delinquency.
Okay, so they went with the stricter interpretation.
Exactly. But, and this is where it gets even more interesting, the SJC recognized that this interpretation could create a bit of a logistical problem.
Okay, what do you mean?
They basically said, okay, if we say that first offense always means no prior adjudications, then how can a court ever establish jurisdiction over a juvenile for a second minor offense?
Oh, I see.
Like, if the first offense always has to be dismissed before there can be a second offense.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of a catch-22, right?
It is, yeah.
So they realized they needed to come up with a solution to that problem.
So what did they do? How did they fix that?
So the SJC did something pretty creative here. They basically created a new legal procedure.
Okay, like what?
They said, okay, from now on, when a juvenile comes into court and says, hey, this is my first offense, this case should be dismissed under Section 52, the Commonwealth has to prove that it's not a first offense.
Mm.
And they have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest standard of proof in criminal law.
Wow.
And they have to do this in a special hearing that happens before the actual arraignment.
So before the formal charges are even read, there's this whole other mini trial just to determine whether this is actually a first offense or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pre-arraignment evidentiary hearing.
Okay.
And in this hearing, the Commonwealth can present any evidence they have to show that the juvenile has committed a prior offense.
Okay.
Now, the SJC didn't explicitly say what kind of evidence is admissible in these hearings,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like they were suggesting that the Commonwealth could even present evidence of prior uncharged conduct, you know, stuff that never even resulted in an arrest.
Oh, wow.
So not just prior adjudications, but potentially any evidence that shows a pattern of behavior.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it is. It's like they're giving the Commonwealth some leeway to look beyond just the formal record.
I see. Okay, so to recap, if the Commonwealth can prove in this pre-arraignment hearing that the juvenile has committed a prior offense beyond a reasonable doubt, then the current case can proceed in juvenile court.
Right.
But if they can't prove that, then the case has to be dismissed under Section 52.
Exactly. So it's a pretty big shift in how these cases are handled.
It is, yeah. Okay, so what happened to Wallace specifically? What did this ruling mean for him?
Well, the SJC sent Wallace's case back down to the trial court.
Okay.
And they basically gave the Commonwealth two options.
Okay.
Option one, they could keep going with that felony breaking and entering case that Wallace had pending.
Right.
And if they got a delinquency adjudication in that case, then that would automatically disqualify Wallace from claiming first offense status on the misdemeanor charge.
Right, because then he would have a formal finding of guilt on the record.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's option one. What was option two?
Option two was to try to prove a prior offense in one of those new pre-arraignment hearings.
Okay.
Even though those earlier charges had been dismissed, they could still try to present evidence of those offenses to the judge and argue that, you know, even though these charges were dropped, we still believe, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Wallace actually committed these offenses.
I see. So the SJC was giving the Commonwealth a chance to prove their case, even if they didn't have a prior adjudication to rely on.
Exactly. So it was a pretty nuanced ruling. It provided a pathway for the Commonwealth to still hold juveniles accountable while also protecting their rights and ensuring that they weren't being unfairly punished for prior charges that were never proven.
It's a delicate balance, for sure.
Yeah.
So beyond Wallace's case, what are some of the broader implications of this decision? Like, what does this mean for the juvenile justice system in Massachusetts going forward?
Well, for one thing, it definitely raises the bar for the Commonwealth when it comes to prosecuting these minor misdemeanor cases.
Okay.
They can't just rely on prior charges anymore.
Right.
They actually have to prove a prior offense in a separate hearing, which takes time and resources.
Right.
So it's a more demanding process now.
Okay. And what about for juveniles? Like, what does this mean for their rights?
Well, I think it definitely provides more protection for young people who are facing these relatively minor charges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rule of lenity is now firmly in place, and they have this extra layer of protection with these pre-arraignment hearings.
Right.
So it's a win for juvenile rights advocates, for sure.
Okay. But didn't the SJC also seem a little hesitant about whether this was the perfect solution?
Yeah, they did. In fact, Justice Kofker, who wrote the majority opinion, he specifically called on the legislature to step in and provide more guidance on this issue.
Okay.
They basically said, look, we've done our best to interpret the statute and create a procedure that makes sense, but ultimately it's up to the legislature to provide a clear and definitive answer to this first offense question.
Right.
And they were worried about these pre-arraignment hearings becoming too burdensome on the courts.
Right. I can see that.
Like, it's a whole new layer of litigation and it could slow things down considerably.
Right.
So they were basically saying, hey, legislature, if you want to avoid these potential problems, you need to clarify this statute.
Got it. So they kind of punted it back to the legislature a little bit.
Yeah, in a way. But they also recognized the importance of balancing rehabilitation with accountability.
Right.
Like, in Justice Kafker's opinion, there's this line where he says, the rehabilitative purposes of the act recognize the difference between an isolated act of misbehavior and a pattern of such misbehavior.
Yeah, that's a good quote.
Like, they're acknowledging that there's a difference between a kid making a one-time mistake and a kid who's constantly getting into trouble.
Right, exactly.
And they're saying, look, this first offense provision is meant for those isolated incidents, not for kids who are repeatedly engaging in harmful behavior.
Right.
So it's all about finding that balance.
Okay. Right, for sure. Okay, so just to wrap up here, for our listeners, especially those of you who are law students, there are a few key takeaways from this case. Number one, you really got to understand the difference between a charge and an adjudication.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, a charge is just an accusation. An adjudication is an actual finding of guilt by a court.
Right.
And that distinction is super important, especially in juvenile law.
Yeah, it's fundamental.
Number two, This case is a great example of the rule of lenity in action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a statute is ambiguous, the court should interpret it in the way that's most favorable to the defendant.
Exactly.
And number three, This case shows how courts can get really creative in coming up with solutions to complex legal problems.
Yeah, like they literally created a whole new procedure with these pre-arraignment hearings.
Right, exactly. So it's a fascinating case, and it really highlights some of the big challenges and debates in juvenile justice.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a case worth studying and thinking about.
So as a final thought for everyone listening, think about this. Given all the complexities that we've talked about, how do you think the legislature should clarify this first offense language in Section 52?
Yeah, what's the best way to balance those goals of rehabilitation and accountability?
Right, like what kind of language would be clear and fair, but also prevent potential loopholes and ensure that the system is working effectively?
It's a tough question, but it's one that lawmakers are going to have to grapple with.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Wallace W. versus Commonwealth. It's a case that's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Absolutely. It's a really important decision with some lasting implications for juvenile justice in Massachusetts.
Okay, that's it for today. See you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you then.